Hello everybody, good evening, welcome to the Scottish Rugby Podcast brought to you by the Scottish Rugby Blog. I am Cammy Black. We've got somebody else with us tonight. We've got John with us as always. Ian's not here. Good evening, John.
Good evening, Cammy.
What we've done is we've decided to redress the balance a little bit. We've had numerous letters, John.
That was probably just from last week, to be fair.
since unfortunately we lost Sandy to other commitments, we have been quite Glasgow heavy. I've always said I am. Oh, hang on, I've got the kids' playroom's falling apart around me here. Like a box of stamps decided to attack me.
I thought I'd done a great job as a sort of honorary Edinburgh fan last week. Actually, to be honest, but
to be fair, John, you tried your best, but you know, there's no substitute for someone that genuinely follows Edinburgh. And as we've established, I am wholly apathetic about pro rugby in Scotland. It's club rugby, and then international. Anything in between is just a means to an end for me. But we're very lucky to be joined with a new contributor to the blog. And also long-term listener of the podcast, Craig Manson. Good evening, Craig.
Good evening, all.
I've said your surname right, Craig, because whenever you used to send in comments,
every time,
Craig Mason.
Yeah.
It's the N. I don't know why I miss the N every time.
I'm surprised. Usually I get the other way around. It's usually, oh, are you Charlie's pal? Or, you know, you know Madeline, you know? So it's quite nice to actually have the Manson part mispronounced.
Very good. Well, we're live at the moment on YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and we're also live on our super secret social media group, which is just for our Patreons. So if you like listening to the blog and you don't like the adverts, then you can subscribe to our Patreon for £3 a month. And in return, you get ad-free content, you get exclusive episodes. We are working with in the next couple of weeks, we're going to do our trip into the 2000s for Scotland's hardest player, which I'm thinking, what, 5-10 minutes, John, on that?
Do you know what? I think
Jason
White. And to be fair, anyone that, I think Nick DeLuca is going to be in there for basically putting up with absolute nonsense from Scotland fans. So that's pure heart. Sean Lamont for just wearing what he wore all the time. Like those tips and orange gloves. I mean, that's hard as well. So,
There'll be a few options. There'll be probably more from the women's game than the men's game anyway. So,
yes.
So that's £3 a month. If you want to, you can pay a little bit extra. And good evening here. He's actually joined just as we speak. Malcolm McDee has joined the Doogie Donnelly Lounge for £5 a month. Good evening, Malcolm. Thank you very much for your contribution. You're very welcome in the Doogie Donnelly Lounge. So for £5 a month, you get your name read out on the podcast. So if you go to Patreon,
and if you write a comment as well, you can get like double. You can get like your name read out and get a wee comment up as well. That's epic. And
everyone gets to see your Facebook picture as well. So that's patreon.com/Scottish Rugby Podcast. We are also sponsored by Manscaped. If you are interested in gentlemen's grooming products, if that is something you're into, then if you go to manscaped.com/Scottish Rugby, you can get 20% off plus free shipping on a range of male grooming products. Primarily, as we said, John, for the downstairs area.
Yes, primarily so. Yes.
Craig's new on the podcast. I'm not going to ask you, Craig. I'm not going to.
And I'm going to quietly not comment. That's fine.
But you know, if you know, like we said, you know, lockdown is easing, and perhaps you're a single gentleman and you're wanting to get yourself back out there meeting people again, and maybe you just want to give yourself a little tidy up, then go to manscaped.com/Scottish Rugby, and you get 20% off there plus free shipping. They sent us the clippers. John's used those on his head.
I do use those on my head. They're very, very good.
Very gentle, are they?
Very gentle on the old scalp, yes. They're waterproof as well. So if you want to, you know, scalp yourself whilst in the shower, that's quite useful.
Yep. And then they've got nose hair trimmers and all sorts of stuff. So pop on over to the website and have a look. So we've got a fair bit of news to catch up on. There's been two big retirements announced today. And the first one, I'm pleased Craig's here for this, although we weren't expecting it, is Chris Fusaro has announced his retirement. I couldn't believe, John, that Chris Fusaro is only 31. I thought he was older than that.
Yeah, I think there's maybe suggestions of a Nigerian passport there, because there's no way. It seems like he's been around a long time as well, and he has that kind of, probably that look about him. Probably he's been at the bottom of too many rucks. That's his issue. Ages, put years on you.
I have to say, he is the first person at every single breakdown fight. Any time there's any sandbags, there's Chris Fusaro straight in there. And that's the how man in him, I think.
I know. I was going to say, I tried to find the footage of his famous fight with Scott McLeod back in 2010-1872 Cup game. We've got wee tiny Chris Fusaro taking on in front enough to Scott McLeod, where they both got red carded and banned for only a week.
Those were the days.
Game's gone soft.
That's it. Let the boys play.
Let the boys fight. What, Craig? I mean, obviously, Fuzzy's a Fife man, and you're involved with the club. What's it like for a club like Howe to have someone like Fuzzy kind of around and about?
It's funnily enough, it's you'd be surprised the amount of Glasgow tops and Glasgow training gear and pairs of boots that first 15 members are wearing that have actually been procured from someone fairly close to Mr. Fusaro. But no, he's that group of players, along with Pete Horn, and there's a lot of the boys that were involved in the cup win at Murrayfield. I think it was the under 16 cup. They have been very inspirational with the Howe, and Chris Fusaro, Pete Horn have really given a lot of the players, a lot of the younger players, someone to look up to and push to become. I was very, very lucky when I was that age. I had Dave Rollo, who's Scotland player, Lions player, and to look up to. And they've got Chris Fusaro, they've got Pete Horn, and they're around the club as well. It's not like they don't turn up. They're now away in this celebrity culture, etc. As a Glasgow player, they're now, they're there regularly, and it's fantastic to have them around.
Yeah, and it was a lovely touch today. I mean, a few people might have seen this. I think you posted it, Craig. Is there's a photo, and they got the Howe kits home and away.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's called in rugby. The entire Glasgow squad dressed in these kits today for a photo to announce his retirement, which was lovely to see.
Aye, some of them were a bit baggy on some of the players, so I think some of us have been accidentally been stretching them out for them.
I was surprised. how loose fitting it was on Ollie Kebble.
I just have to spat my beer out there. That was no comment. I don't know. I've tried to roll one of those shirts on, but I never managed. It got down to about here, and that was about it.
And John, what about Chris Fusaro for Glasgow then? Because he's been a real stalwart in that team, and he's part of the Pro 12 winning team. But he's been around since it was 2010. I think he made his debut.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's always been one of those players. There was a period of time where up and around the kind of Pro 12 win, he was one of those guys who was really kind of influential. You seen him in the team sheet and you thought, all right, okay, we're going to get a bit of fight today. We're going to get, there's going to be aggression in the team today. And then there was a period sort of a few years ago where he kind of completely went off the radar, and he was fit, but he wasn't playing for Glasgow. And a lot of fans thought he was finished, thought he'll be on his way. Every time that we came up to contract renewal time, it was like, Fusaro will be away this time. And he would always get a year or 2 years. And he came back from that period out, and I remember it was when Dave Rennie was the manager, and he was just unbelievable when he came back into that team, and the standards he was driving, you could see the players were like visibly lifted by having him around. So it's great that a guy like him gets to retire, from what I understand, relatively on his own terms, relatively fit. He's had a cracking club career, and has obviously played internationally as well. So for someone who was dubbed too small many moons ago, I'm sure he's done no bad.
Well, I was going to say there's two things I'll pick up on. I mean, the first is I've heard a rumor, and this may not be true, that his contract was not going to be renewed a few seasons ago, and there was a player revolt, which just shows how highly he's thought of within the squad. And I think you see that with the comments that Al Kellogg made today, Craig, just talking about not just professionally but personally, you know, what Chris Fusaro means to the players at Glasgow.
Yeah, the comments that have been made about Chris, but then if I remember back, going back to what John was saying, if I remember correctly, when he came back from the sort of the wilderness, did he not get player of the year or
Glasgow club player of the year?
Stands testament to the guy. He's all of the comments that have been made. Everybody that I know is talking about him retiring and saying, we just, you know, some people have said, had he not retired already? But especially when he took up the coaching post at, what's the team in Glasgow? He took up a coaching post, and we all thought that was him done. But he's always been there, and then he came on a few games ago. He came on off the bench, and I thought, oh, he's still playing, he's still doing well. And I think it stands testament to him, and we're all incredibly proud of him, even though he's got a Glasgow Warriors badge on his chest. But we're very proud of him.
Assistant coach at Glasgow High.
That's it, Glasgow High. Sorry, my apologies.
So, I mean, John, you touched on this earlier, this idea of him being too small. And this was, he got his one cap in 2014 when Scotland were playing two sixes in the back row. And despite you had Chris Fusaro going great guns at Glasgow, you had
Roddy Grant
at Edinburgh, you know, two guys, you know, absolutely tearing up trees in the Pro 12 as it was at the time.
But John Barclay as well, tearing up trees elsewhere at the time as well, who was playing seven previously.
Yeah, overlooked by I think Scott, you know, it'd be Scott Johnson at the time.
Scott Johnson, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Fusaro gets his one and only cap in a horrendous Calcutta Cup match against England. I think he got a couple of A caps, but you know, I think the same is right. You could say about Roddy Grant, he just wasn't given a fair chance at national level.
It was around at that time that we. You touched on it. We didn't play a game that, you know, Scotland were always renowned for those kind of small, let's see it, the Hamish Watson style of seven, you know, not small, but definitely not, you know, an absolute brute of a seven. They got about, they were great at the breakdown. And we tried to follow the English model with that two sixes nonsense. And we tried to be something we weren't. And it came at a time that Roddy Grant and Chris Fusaro and probably countless others who kind of could have made a step up to international rugby and probably done a very good job, they were compromised by that. And that was, you know, I remember an interview with, we're going to have a rant about Scott Johnson now.
I need a jingle. It's such a regular feature. We need a jingle for it.
My therapist is taking this like, bless. She didn't know who Scott Johnson was before we start. No, I remember an interview with him when not long after he started the Scotland coach, and he was talking about the competition at the breakdown and saying we were not going to compete at the breakdown. And that was the death knell for like guys like Fusaro, guys like Grant, saying you're not going to compete at the breakdown because that's what the guys in the Southern Hemisphere do. It's like, I'm not entirely sure you're watching rugby, Scott Johnson. Is that really what they do? No, I don't think so.
And it's strange, it's 2014, Craig, that Chris Fusaro makes his debut, and then was it the next World Cup we're playing with two sevens?
Yeah. And the thing is, for you know, someone who is an out-and-out ball fetcher as Chris Fusaro was, it was ridiculous. If you look at who we have now and how we play the game now, he was a, I'm not going to say he's a man before time, but before his time, but you know, it's crazy to think that he only got one cap. Especially when you look at, just as you say, you look at his club background and you look at how much he is loved in Glasgow, you know.
Yeah. The other big retirement, well, I don't know if it's a big retirement because I think we all kind of knew.
This was one we all thought was retired.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I think he'd been retired for a while. Alex Dunbar was the other retirement. But I think from his announcement, he's been working on the farm for quite a while now. So it's another one, John, where I think it's hard to know with Alex Dunbar is whether he left Scottish Rugby or Scottish Rugby left him, because there's conflicting stories, I think, and conflicting viewpoints over how it all ended for him.
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely. Again, that man Dave Rennie is going to get a wee mention again. Dunbar, he had a lot of injuries, let's be honest, and he struggled coming back from some of the last couple of injuries he had. He did struggle to get a run of games together, but when he played, he didn't look bad. and it was always a frustration of Glasgow fans that Rennie maybe wasn't giving him a run in the team, because he was. But again, this is back to, you know, we've talked about this so many times, Cammy, that we see a player for 80 minutes or 60 minutes on a Friday or a Saturday. The coaches see the player all the time, and you've got to hope that there's a decision made based on their training performance or you know, how they're handling themselves behind the scenes. But Alex Dunbar offered something that Glasgow didn't have at that point and probably haven't had since. And I would go as far as to say that Scottish Rugby hasn't had since, and that kind of very attritional 12 with defensive skills, you know, he was probably one of the best defensive centres we've had. Maybe Chris Harris is going to step up to that mantle now, but particularly his work over the ball. He was, like, you know, we've talked about Chris Fazzaro in the flanker position. Alex Dunbar was an extra flanker, and the amount of turnover ball he won Glasgow over the years, as well as being still the fastest recorded Scottish player of,
is that right?
of all time. For his try against Italy, it was, yeah, I think it was the fastest recorded.
Do they have somebody stood at the back of the things with a speed gun or something?
I think it was the GPS trackers.
All right.
But yeah, I remember there was a big deal. Maybe it's been surpassed by now. I'd imagine it probably has, but he was clocked at, like, I'll dig out the figure through the podcast, but yeah, he was officially the fastest ever Scottish rugby player at that point.
Yeah. And it's strange, when I was looking up at this, I think I found an interview that Jamie Lyle had done with Matt Taylor when he left as the defence coach, Craig, talking about how much Scotland missed Alex Dunbar. And it's that thing, I think there is a, you know, I suppose, I don't know whether this has changed in the last year or so, but it must be hard at international level when they want these players to be playing, but at club level or the pro club level, they're not getting the games because there are other guys they need to use.
Yeah, it's a weird one, because you automatically think that the cream of the crop are going to be in a Scotland shirt. You know, this cream of the crop of Scottish rugby, the people that are the best people for that position are going to be in that position. But we were at sea for quite some time defensively. We would either turn up or we wouldn't, and a lot of the time we wouldn't. And Alex Dunbar was always one of those players that would turn up regularly day in, day out, not only for his club when he could, but for Scotland. And he was always, in my opinion, you know, I don't know a huge amount about the backs, I've got to say. It's more about, I tend to have my head down and thunder into things. But, you know, you want a player that's a defensive captain, someone who's going to lead by example, and he is one of those people. And I actually was really I'm going to ask a question here. I'm right, he went to Newcastle Falcons
temporarily. Yeah, and then he went to Breve, I think, for a bit.
Yeah. He was patched out of Glasgow unceremoniously.
I thought, great, you're going to see him in the Premiership and he's going to show the player he is. And then all of a sudden he disappeared off to Breve. So, you know, as I say, but as you guys know and everybody knows, we are Scots, as Scots rugby players, that there are Scottish rugby players littered everywhere that have had 1, 2, 3 caps that should have had more caps than that, and then you've got people who are unceremoniously discarded when a coach decides that they're going to play a different way, and Chris Harris has really shown that we need those defensive captains.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think the interesting thing is, and there was a we got tagged on the blog Twitter today. Gary Heatley's done an interview with Matt Scott, who's playing down in Leicester, and a lot of people saying, you know, he's the one. I think, Greg, you know, he, obviously when he was playing for Edinburgh, you know, really kind of playing well again, playing well with his rugby, and just it wasn't offered the deal. But I think sometimes people forget, yeah, we've got these players playing well elsewhere, you've got them, but to a certain extent you think, well, yeah, but they've got to be better than the options we already have. And unfortunately, sometimes better players just come along, or players, John, I suppose, that fit the game plan of what the coaches want better.
Yeah, I think Scotland's the kind of death knell for Dunbar, particularly for Scotland. But obviously, you know, if you're not getting game time for Glasgow, you're not going to get game time for Scotland, in theory. Hugh Jones. The second option is a distributor at 12. You know, using, I think particularly once we started to really rely on Russell as being the primary playmaker, and then having a second option at 12, that was when guys like Dunbar, who had many, many talents as a defensive organiser, and actually you could argue was a better 13 than he was 12. That was when he wasn't quick enough for 13 by that point in his career. He had too many knee surgeries. So at that point, he's kind of, you know, there wasn't much chance, and yet coaches had decided to play a different way. I've got the number in front of me, though. He was recorded against Italy at 33.8 kilometres an hour.
What's that in miles an hour? Come on. Of Brexit now, John. Not in this kilometres an hour nonsense.
33.8.
I want to see how well. I once drunkenly ran past, well, you know, the speed cameras that show you your speed. I once drunkenly ran past one of those, and I want to see if I've beaten him or not.
That was 21 miles an hour.
Oh, I think I clocked 15 when I was drunk one night in one of those wee flashy ones that give you your speed.
You weigh about, like, you're about 9 stone wet, mate. Slightly bigger than that.
Double that, John.
Hey, listen, give me a downhill run, I'll be fine.
But no, I think there's a lot of, again, it's one of those ones that might come out of the wash. He always seemed like such a quiet big lad that, you know, we'll probably not hear the full story of what went down. Yeah.
He seems quite happy back from his Instagram post where he announced his retirement. He seems more than happy to be back on the farm. I think that was kind of his second home.
Me and Rona Sweeting have and numerous others have talked at length about how nice Alex Dunbar's dogs were. we were all about
rugby chat.
Alex Dunbar's dogs, top dogs, man, top dogs.
Yeah. Okay. Well, should we? Craig, I'm really sorry to do this. You know, we've invited you on the podcast, and I had hoped, you know, we'd be getting you on with slightly better, you know, better circumstances for Edinburgh than we've had. And it's maybe been a surprise. I mean, I wasn't here last week. John said I was. Did you say I was away doing something responsible, John?
No, I didn't. No, Ian said you were doing something responsible. I was trying to suggest you were away doing absolute carnage. But Ian was Ian was well behaved last week. Like,
I know, I had my COVID jag, and I told them not to mention it because I didn't want to get banned from Facebook again by them starting making cracks with 5G and that. So
there was a lot of material.
So, Craig.
Yes.
Let's start with, you know, how does it feel for Edinburgh at the minute? Because, I mean, coming into these two games particularly, it felt like Edinburgh were in better shape than Glasgow.
Yeah, I think the horrible game that Glasgow had in Italy bucked everyone up and said, right, here we go. 1872 Cup is coming home. We're going to go in absolute... Because Edinburgh's game plan at this moment in time, and I'll probably go into it a little bit more further down the line, but is very much run at them and rattle them as far and break through tackles, break through, get the ball through the tackle and get the ball offloaded quickly. And so when they saw Glasgow, and I've got, and you know, I'm sure I'm going to get absolutely friendly fire thrown back at me by John, but seeing Glasgow leak so many tries against a team that you just didn't expect it, obviously your tails go up and you think, yeah, okay, we're on for this. To be fair, you know, and I'm a fair man. Glasgow absolutely fronted up 2 weeks ago for the 1872. Again, we saw a little bit of it on the weekend as well. Their defence has really sorted themselves out and got it. You know, they were, in fact, to the point, and we talk, you know, when we talk about when we're coaching positive and passive defence, they're positive all the time. They're trying to knock, hit two people, you know, hit one person with two tacklers at one time, pushing them back over the game line, not letting Edinburgh get over the game line, and they were doing a lot of that. We were feeling a little bit, we had our tails up, and maybe we shouldn't have. Maybe we should have been thinking what's in front of us, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting when you mentioned kind of like, you know, what Edinburgh's game plan, because when you look at the stats that you can get access to, which aren't many, because they don't tend to publish them for the Pro 14, but the most metres made from either side. So it's 75 metres by Willem Mata and 117 for Adam Hastings. So is that kind of where Edinburgh are going at the minute? Is it just trying to power through the forwards? Is that the game plan?
From what, you know, we can tell, and you know, it's the biggest problem, I think, is that we're working to Richard Cockerell's game plan. We're working to Richard Cockerell's club ethos. We're working to Richard. In fact, the whole of Edinburgh is just working for Richard Cockerell. And you know, we attack wise, we're incredibly dull. We're hitting. We're using everybody as, even Christine, for example. Christine, the supposed king of Edinburgh, or prince of Edinburgh, I should say. Constantly hitting up, constantly hitting through. Every time he gets the ball, the ball doesn't get outside him because he's constantly going for the player, taking on the player in front of him. Our forwards are incredibly good. They're set up the right way. They're hitting strong lines. They're constantly pushing on. But the problem you have is that you do that for 30 metres, someone's going to get wise to it, and then they're going to either rip the ball out of your hands, turn it over, or you're going to drop it. And the way Glasgow were hitting us, you're going to end up, I don't care what anybody says, I can be the biggest guy in the world. If I'm hit correctly, the ball is going to come out of my hands because I've been totally shocked. And that's what happens. And that is Edinburgh's, as a fan, Edinburgh have been like this for years. They link a fantastic set of play up. You think, this is going to be fantastic. And then they drop the ball, or they turn it over, or they kick it into touch. And it goes straight out, and you have to go away back, march yourself back up. It just seems to be that way. Sorry, I'm starting to rant, so I'm going to have to settle down
fine.
Here.
That's fine. But John, yeah. Do you think? I mean, John, well, do you think is that what Glasgow saw in front of them? Do you think it's just that, you know, the Edinburgh maybe a bit one dimensional? That it is all just through the forwards, and they're not taking it wide, and it's quite easy to read that then.
Well, I think. So, address a couple of points first. Craig, you're absolutely right. You know, looking at Glasgow's, not even just that singular game, but looking at Glasgow on the whole this season, you would be confident of scoring tries against them, and you'd be confident of doing that in a very brutish manner. They're not the most physical team. If you run straight and hard at them, generally, eventually, they'll cough up points. And it's been a problem all season, and you know, then you look at the Rolling Mall, for example. We still cough up tries constantly in the Rolling Mall, and we give away penalties by the gazillion load. Like, we just hand them out like candy. So you're right to come into that game with that. And I think Glasgow have benefited over the last couple of weeks from a couple of things. Edinburgh haven't been that good, right? Now, Edinburgh have not played to their potential. They've also, as you say, they're playing a limited game plan for a number of reasons, one of which is you've got Nathan Chamberlain at 10, who is not being trusted to do anything from 10. And I've been saying this all season and, you know, last season, but he's not been trusted to actually play the game and play make. So he's our running really limited game plan. Glasgow came in the first game on the Rob Harley 250 emotional high, and they basically just tackled a lot and then scored some nice tries. They've also benefited from having a couple of really influential players back. Guys like Kyle Steyn coming back for Glasgow is a huge bonus. And you could see the difference he made last week, the driving that emotion, driving the energy that Glasgow have been lacking. And for all my criticisms of Glasgow this year, and yes, I have been very, very, very vocal regarding the lack of game plan from Glasgow's side as well, it's very easy to get away with not having a game plan when you've got world-class individual players who are going to just do something brilliant and score you points. So guys like Kyle Steyn, guys like Adam Hastings, on your side, guys like Doohan, who just will do something and get you points, and it gets you out a hole. But it doesn't take away from the fact that both clubs are playing a very limited brand of rugby, and it's my concern is that, yes, we're seeing both clubs stripped back at the moment, you know, in a lot of ways. They've got internationals out there, but there's, you know, Edinburgh in particular are not really playing many of their internationals, or there's a lot of injuries, or something's going on there. We've heard rumours, yeah. But Scotland as the national side, you've got to hope that Townsend will insulate the national side from that, because we don't want that limited game plan starting to creep up to the national team. We're still playing with enough attacking flair at a national level, whilst obviously having a defensive pragmatism. But Glasgow and Edinburgh are both playing very limited, and it's concerning.
I think, yeah, because I mean, the worry, particularly, I mean, last week was particularly bad, right? In Glasgow game, 28 penalties for Glasgow last year.
Honestly, I'm surprised it was only 28. And poor, like, right, Danny Wilson, after the game, you know, he gets congratulated on the win, and then it's the, well, you know, we've obviously still given away a lot of penalties, and we know we need to talk about that. We've been talking about that all season. Why is this still a conversation? Why are we still giving away, like, almost three times as many penalties as is acceptable? And we're not talking about inexperienced players here. There's a game plan issue, or there's a communication issue. Something is not right, and it should have been fixed. Well, it should have been fixed so many months ago. Every other club manages it. Why are we giving away so many penalties? It's just ridiculous.
Rob Harley swam up them all. I were in front of the touch judge and the referee, and I'm thinking, come on, Rob, you're a better guy than that.
Yes, the ref gives him a chance as well. He says to him, don't change your mind. Whoop, there we go. Let's have some of that. I mean, if I had here, I'd be telling, like, Rob, what are you? There's so many brain dead penalties Glasgow have given away. It's, oh.
I don't think it's not just a Glasgow problem, though, because, I mean, you know, it was a level pegging. It was 12-13, I think, and Edinburgh just won that, edged that one, Craig. I think you got the 12 to Glasgow's 13 this week.
Yeah, thank goodness for the greatest Schumann, that's for sure.
But it's the worry, I think, is, you know, the last two games have been real, from a spectator point of view, really entertaining rugby, great games to watch. But the worry is that the moment either team now has to go and face opposition out with Scotland, do you know what I mean? Out with, you know, you're asking for trouble. We don't know, you know, especially 86% tackle completion from Edinburgh this weekend as well. So, yeah. I mean, anytime you drop below 90, you're in trouble.
Yeah. And we've got Ulster coming up, you know.
We will raise you Ulster and see you Leinster. Dragons first to get some injuries, and then we'll go and take on Leinster. Yeah, great. Can we cancel the season now?
The thing is, I was talking to our friend Johnny McGinty, and we were talking about how frustrated I was with Edinburgh. But on the other side of things, it's just as John says. You know, we're not sitting heralding Glasgow and saying what I would say is Glasgow turned it round, and they have done a fantastic job to turn it round. We don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater because we're missing so many players that could make a difference. You know, Darcy's not there. We've not got Nick Haining. We've not got Grant Gilchrist. We've not got Hamish Watson. We've got Jamie Ritchie. You know, we've not got Rory Sutherland. You know, there's some heavy-duty players that aren't involved in the game. Now, fantastic to give the young guys some game time and oh my goodness, didn't Tom Lambert take his chance on the weekend? But, you know, we were only a score in it. And any of those players that are either injured, you know, or they're not available or they're being rested, any of them on the field could have made that difference. So, however, I would say if you put Glasgow's backline and Edinburgh's forwards together, then you would have a pretty tasty team that not only would win you your set piece, but I quite liked the flow of Glasgow on the weekend. I thought at least the wingers saw the ball. You know, Doohan has to come constantly off his wing, searching for the ball at the moment for Edinburgh, and that's what I'm worried about. I would rather see him with, you know, he's going to be a lion. You know, okay, he's not going to be here for very much longer, but let's get the ball to him and let's get as much out of him as we possibly can, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's the, I suppose with Edinburgh, and one of the things that John was touching on earlier is the way that Edinburgh, certainly from a perception point of view, is that Glasgow seemed to be kind of, Danny Wilson certainly seemed to have said to the Glasgow youngsters, on you go, you've got permission to play what's in front of you. And maybe it's just that the Glasgow game plan makes it look like that's what they're doing and they're actually not, but you don't necessarily get the impression that Edinburgh is the same, that Nathan Chamberlain's been given the same free rein as Ross Thompson has, for example, to play what's in front of him and to, you know, to have a go. I mean, and you had Charlie Savala at the weekend?
Yes.
And did you see him as a, did he have a good game from your point of view? Is that another option at 10 or is it?
The problem I have is I can't tell you if he's had a good game or not, because I don't feel he's getting the speed of delivery that he should be getting. Again, I'm going to have to give a fiver to Johnny McGinty because I said I wouldn't go on a rant about him, but Henry Purgos is doing my head in. A lot of people say positive things about him and say he's a great game controller. He's very, you know, but you know, you looked at two games ago, you know, with Ali Price was on the field, and Ali Price, I've never been the biggest fan of Ali Price. Sorry to say, I've never been his biggest fan, but he was George Hornish when he was young. He then, what I thought Gregor Townsend did was take the corners off him and slow him down, and I thought, God, he's turning to Greg Laidlaw, and then all of a sudden he's found that balance, and he's that ball's coming out of the ruck. The ruck speed is far, far quicker. I am banging my head against I'm almost taking the TV off the wall when Henry Burgos is taking, even if it's 10th of a second or 2/10 of a second too long. I think George Turner got a turnover on the last game, on the weekend there, that was there. Purgos had his hands on the ball and he could have got it out of the ruck in a way, but he faffed about with it so long that George Turner managed to get his hands properly on the ball, and all of a sudden it's a penalty to Glasgow. So yeah, I think Savala's had a difficult time in his first two games because I don't think he's been given the opportunity to shine.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting, the scrum half thing at Edinburgh, and it's a tale as all the time with Scottish scrum halves, because you can never tell when the replacement scrum half sent off on, often they're there to up the tempo and they're playing a different game.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to contrast in Henry Purgos and Charlie Shield because they're being given different jobs to do by the coaches. On the other hand, Charlie Shield has looked absolutely like a man possessed.
Yeah, yeah.
The last two games. I mean, at the end of the last game, I mean, it was almost if I hadn't had the shakes off the jag, I would have been on ranting about it, because it bothered me how the last game ended with him berating the referee. But actually, yeah, on reflection, there's a guy who cares. And to a certain extent, that's maybe what Edinburgh need, is a bit more of a guy who kind of cares. Well, and
Cammy, the thing is, though, I think Cockerill's sacrificing player autonomy for his game plan. I think he doesn't have a leadership group there. He's the leadership group at Edinburgh. The leadership group, and if you remember... the leadership group at Leicester Tigers were the ones that got rid of Cockerill. So you can look back at it and say, right, well, you know, I can understand why, but he has a game plan and they stick to it. I think it was Peter Reid that was on the radio saying, you know, Edinburgh players need to understand two things. If you see a hole in front of you, run through it. And also the second thing is, you need players on the park who will G you up. Looking at our defence on the weekend, you know, I think it's part of the commentary said, I think it was John Barclay said, Edinburgh looked tired. You need people around you to, come on. And that's what Charlie Shield does. But the problem with Charlie Shield is that he then overplays. And so he overplays so much that he ends up making mistakes. And that are... you know, will go in time, because George Horn was a similar mould. You know, George Horn was full on, constantly, all the time. But now that he's tempered it slightly, he's actually becoming, I think, better than Ali Price, and I think he will be Scotland's first pick scrum half moving on further down the line, you know. But, you know, that's my Howglass he's on there again.
And John, Glasgow must be pretty delighted to have another Edinburgh cast off in Rory Darge, kind of coming across, and you know what a game he had.
Oh yeah, I mean, right.
All these players come from Edinburgh to Glasgow and instantly do better.
George Turner's the prime, like the prime candidate for that. Can we just mention, if you're looking for an example of how a defence, you know, how passive a defence is being, look at how Turner steamrollers it from 5 metres out. He knocks bodies everywhere. It's class.
It shouldn't be possible. That's the one thing. To do a tap penalty like that and score a try without it going through at least a couple more phases.
No, yeah, you absolutely should not be able to. You should be able to do it at like West 4 level. You should never be able to do that at professional level. But yeah, I mean, Rory Darge, so the frustration from a lot of Glasgow fans' perspective with the Darge situation is that whilst I appreciate the player choice comes into it, there was a number of back rows went to Edinburgh at that same time. A lot of talented back rows went to Edinburgh, and Glasgow we were playing Chris Fazzaro, no disrespect, but you know, we were pretty long in the tooth in the back row. And there was an argument to say that should there have been a better resource balance struck at that time. And now we're addressing that resource balance. Rory Darge has come over. Cracking game. Have you seen his interview with Tom Gordon?
Glasgow Warriors, if you're listening to this, and I think they do occasionally, can we please just have a Tom Gordon podcast, because I would happily have Tom Gordon do post-match interviews all day long. It was wonderful. Dry, and the way that the microphone presentation, the way it's shoving into people's faces, is glorious.
It reminded me of Tom Gordon's first 1872 when he won Man of the Match and didn't have a Scooby where he was.
He said he didn't even know what the score was when he came off the park. No. He wasn't concussed, he was just being Tom Gordon, I think.
And they were like, you've got such and such next to Hovland? Aye? Really?
Yeah. But that interview was really interesting, because it was something that Rory Darge said that I think this probably Craig talks, you know, speaks to what you were saying about Embrez. He was like, what do you feel like to play against your old club? And Rory Darge said, well, I didn't really play for them. You know, that was his answer. I didn't really play for them. You know, I was in and around the squad. You know, obviously it was nice to see the boys again, but I didn't really play for them. And that was his answer to that. And I kind of think, well, that, you know, it kind of speaks something of Embry. If someone like, I know he's a fringe player, but if he doesn't have a sense of belonging to the club, that's all we hear about the big Crockerall project and you're creating a club ethos. Someone like Rory Darge on the fringe who doesn't feel part of the club, then, you know, there's a problem there, I guess.
I really think they're losing their way at the moment, to be perfectly honest. We've almost sacrificed all this, all that. I'm not going to be a disaster monger or anything like that, but I'm certainly not. I'm just slightly worried about it because I think if you look at the fringe players, you look at, for example, Cammy Fenton. Although, you know, a couple of years ago, every time Cammy came on, he scored a try. He was impressive as a hooker, but he was never used. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of it. I've spoken to him a couple of times and he's always kind of batted it away. But you've got these players that are high quality that are arriving in Edinburgh, and then all of a sudden they're not being used. And you're thinking, what, you know, you're going to moan about, oh, we've had a terrible season because all of our players have been away with Scotland this year. Well, you've got all this quality sitting there. Why are they, if they'd been used properly, then they'd be on stream and ready to look at Leinster 3000 Robobot or whatever they're called now. You know, they do that. They constantly play their younger players, even if it's just one. It's a major game, but one of them's inputted into the main team, and they get the opportunity. And I think my concern is that we're doing this to these players that are, you know, John Barclay had not a lot of very pleasing things to say about Edinburgh when he left, and it wasn't just because, you know, he left and it was a bit of sour grapes. He wasn't used to his potential because other players were being put in front of him. You then got the same as Maggie Bradbury. You know, there's a guy who has, maybe he hasn't got the ambition yet, but and maybe he won't ever have the ambition, but here's a guy who's a Scotland player and he's hardly ever playing now for Edinburgh. Now, why is that? There's got to be questions asked.
Yeah. And John, how are you feeling about Glasgow's depth now? Because it's something we were kind of worried about. I suppose it's the last few games where they've been chucking in. We've not really had much other options, Danny Wilson, but, you know, Rufus McLean and, you know, Cole Forbes and stuff. It's looking slightly. I mean, I would say Adam Hastings, but he's off to Gloucester at some point. So
yeah, it was good to see Adam turn up again. I think there's hope on the horizon for Glasgow. The concern for me, and I think both me and you, Craig, were tagged in a thing on Twitter regarding kind of where we see the various pro teams sitting. And I'd said, you know, Cockerell's on a sugary peg, but ultimately I think he's got far too much in the bank to, you know, the SRU are not going to let that go, because I think they see him as potential international candidate in the future. Which, for what it's worth, is a stupid idea, just putting it out there.
We all want a Richard Cockerell, Eddie Jones press conference, John. Don't ruin the dream.
Oh, we do, yeah. I know. Can you imagine? But I indicated that I'm still very... The jury's still very much out on Danny Wilson. I know that a lot of Glasgow fans are like, oh, we have to give him time. He's not had, you know, he's... Pandemic, yeah. He's got plenty of class players there who are not performing. And it's been really telling, actually, that the young guys coming in, you know, and even guys like Cole Forbes coming over. I mean, he just looks manor-born, doesn't he? He's such a good player. But it's these guys coming in that are papering over the cracks just now of a very, very poor game plan. And you only change that by either Danny Wilson has to suck it and say, you know what, no, we need to change completely what we're doing here. But he, in press conferences, has said that he is here to still instill a pragmatic game plan.
I think the worry for Glasgow is that this week they've lost Johnny Bell, the attack coach. They've already lost Kelly Brown. Now, I know it's coronavirus, I know it's difficult times, but, you know, to lose one coach because his family's feeling homesick and hasn't settled, you know, to paraphrase Oscar Wilde, as I did on Twitter the other day, but this, you know, to lose one coach is a misfortune, but to lose two to the same reason looks like carelessness. And I mean, it's a very easy reason to give, isn't it? Oh, my family's homesick. I've been offered a job elsewhere. Off I go. And it could just be coincidence that that's happened in these circumstances. But for two coaches to effectively walk and go and take up positions elsewhere isn't a great look for Glasgow right now.
No, it's not. However, I would counter that by saying that both the attack and the skills breakdown area were exceptionally poor this season. And I think that it's been mutually beneficial for both parties to say, do you know what, you take on that new opportunity. You go down to Worcester and you go and play with Doohan next season. It must be bloody easy to coach an attack with him in it, though, really. Yeah, just
throw the ball to the big boy.
Get the ball to that guy and watch. But you know what? I think Glasgow are in a real... They're having a real identity crisis as well with regards to their coaching. I don't think Danny Wilson should be head coach. I don't think the coaches there, for the most part, are good enough to be Glasgow coaches. You compare someone like Johnny Bell to a Jason O'Halloran, it's not the same league. We're not talking about the same quality of coach. And the SRU need to probably put their back into it. I mean, they've got plenty of it hidden away, squirreled away from other things, haven't they? So maybe throw a wee bit of that cash our way to get some decent coaches in.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult. Okay. I suppose the counter argument is they need to be developing young Scottish coaches.
You can develop young Scottish coaches by having world-class coaches mentoring. You look at, you know, for example, you know, you had Big Petrus at Glasgow. He probably hasn't been replaced, but you know, he was spending a lot of time working with local kind of, you know, scrum coaches in Scotland. So you only get that from having, you know, we can't just, sadly, Scotland's not in a position where we are able to just grow world-class coaches out of nothing. Because we've not had that legacy of having, you know, to be a world-class coach, do you have to be in a world-class environment or do you have to be at the top of your game? Probably not. But you probably do have to have exposure to those environments, and Scottish coaches haven't had that. So I think supplementing with foreign aid, shall we say, it's still okay.
I mean, that's been a problem, Craig, at Glasgow, Edinburgh, I suppose, hasn't it? That you've kind of had Duncan Hodge kicking around for years now. And is that something you think Edinburgh would benefit from as a bit of a outside impetus?
I honestly think it suits Richard Cockerell really well, because I don't think he has very many people turn and say, hang on a minute, coach, you're wrong. Or, hey, coach, I think we should try this. I think we've got quite a lot of... I don't think we've got very many players within the team who will do that as well. And, you know... teams can only get better if there is something wrong and they fix it. So I think no disrespect to Duncan Hodge, because he's been a great member of the team at Edinburgh, both on the field and also off it. But I honestly don't. To quote John, he's quotes on a shugly peg. I really don't think. I think you may see a different attack coach coming in for next season.
Yeah, or maybe they'll send Duncan Hodge along the motorway to you, John.
Maybe. Oh, listen, yeah, here we go. You know, and have you got any others? Could we have any of your cast-offs as well, just to have a wee go as well?
I'm sure there's a few. Yeah,
they tend to come along to Glasgow and they do really well, and then we get guys coming over from. Oh, mind you, Mark Bennett's done okay. I'm quite happy with Mark Bennett, but
yeah, I mean, even then, like you compare Mark Bennett 2013-14. Even 2015 to the Mark Bennett you guys have got. I mean, I'd be like asking for like 40 goods receipt, to be honest.
I see your point, but do you not think though? I think I said this in one of my pieces. If Mark Bennett and Matt Scott together were phenomenal, and the biggest mistake I think we made is letting Matt Scott go, because I think him, even Matt Scott, Jimmy Johnson. You know, Jimmy Johnson was doing great guns, going great guns, and he's now a fringe player, and he's not getting game time. And then, you know, and that's...
Matt Scott's one of those centres that, because he played 10 at age grade as well, he just has a rugby player's brain, where he's got all the pace and all the talent, kicking game that works, but he's not selfish, and he just knows how to put, and it makes the guys outside him and inside him look better. It's actually, I'm going to say it, he is kind of like Pete Horn in that sense. Pete Horn at 12 makes both his 10 and his 13 look better. Now, Pete Horn gets utter pelters for it, but that's why coaches keep picking Pete Horn, because he makes players around him look better, because he does the basics very, very well. And that's what Scott was doing.
And he's an intelligent player, and you do wonder how much, you know, a good coach would appreciate an intelligent player who's willing to speak up and contribute to attack plans and things. And we maybe saw, you know, Gregor Townsend has reviewed his opinion on how much contribution his fly halves should have to the attack plan. And it's, you know, it's to the better of everybody all around that he's, you know, he's come to that way of thinking. But you do wonder whether or not, you know, maybe with Ember and maybe Glasgow as well, John, that the coaches want to impose their game plan and don't have time to listen to these guys who are, you know, who are there delivering the week in, week out.
It's frustrating because the club coaches should have infinitely more time to listen to those guys, and the game plan should be getting set from that level and moving forward. Townsend at Glasgow was very much all about including everyone in the game plan and making sure everyone was contributing. And then, obviously, at international level, it's different because you've got time pressures. But the fact that, I mean, I raised my eyebrows and like made a wow face when you said about there not being a leadership group at Edinburgh under Cockerill. And it's not surprising in the sense that, given all the stuff we've heard about him and the way he's left other jobs under a cloud and things, you know, he's very much, he's the dictator type of manager, isn't he?
I was thinking about this, though, the other day. I'm not necessarily sure that Glasgow have that either, because they've given, you know, you've given the captaincy to Ryan Wilson, and you don't put the rodeo clown in charge of the rodeo. Do you know what I mean? And I mean that with the greatest respect.
Ryan Wilson.
I know, you know, with the greatest respect to Ryan Wilson, that his job is to, the job that he fulfills at Glasgow, I think, is the, you know, he's the guy that keeps, he's the office clown, isn't he? You know, he's the guy that keeps everybody happy, he's the guy that keeps spirits up, but that's not the guy you put in charge. That's not the guy you have as a leader. Do you know what I mean? I think it's often mistaken for natural leadership, the guy that G's you up and the guy that tells a joke and the guy that everybody likes. But I think that's sometimes a mistake, is you don't necessarily always make the guy that everyone likes your leader or part or the head of the leadership group. And you know, Al Kellogg's probably a good example of that, and you know, he's managing director now. I can imagine that everybody would have lived in absolute fear of Al Kellogg, but he drove the standards at Glasgow when he was captain there. And people, the other players probably would have lived in fear of him and maybe wouldn't have even liked him, but he's not there to be liked, I guess.
Yeah, there is a natural, I think, given the way that the squad's been in transition for a couple of seasons, there has been a natural lack of leadership. And if you think about the quality of players that have left Glasgow over the last few years, and, you know, just going back to our current Scotland captain left Glasgow, you know, he would have been part of the leadership at Glasgow. Johnny Gray, guys like that. But also, yeah, the guys who've been left are not... I think losing Callum Gibbons was a massive blow for Glasgow, and he was probably the last decent leader we had in that
squad.
And
again, the rumour there is that he wasn't wanted by the incoming coach, was the rumour. And again, this is a thing, you know, you've got two coaches possibly trying to exert their influence over the squads, and that isn't necessarily, you know, going to pay dividends.
You look at, yes, fair enough, you know, if you look where Edinburgh were under Solomon, Alan Solomons, and then you look at them under Cockerill, don't get me wrong, it's night and day. But the problem you have with them is if you look at how they've developed over time, they've got to their highs. They never got to they got to their semi, their quarterfinals, etc., and failed at the opportunity when a stronger led team came up against them and knew what to do against them, because they are easy to read. If you look at how, you know, what if you speak to anyone in the rugby community and say, how does Edinburgh play? you think that they're really good at a set piece. Their set piece is incredibly strong. They run short lines off their forwards, and they hit up all the time. That, as a defence coach for someone else, another team, that's manna from heaven for me, because there's nobody there, and there's an ability to read them, to turn them over, to defend really. All you need to do is defend heavily, get in up in their face, and they run out of ideas. So I think you need leaders who are going to, like Callum Gibbons to me, was the guy that would drag you up on off the field by your collar and say, get up and get back in the line. And it kind of, I'm old school, you can probably tell I'm an old boy that's bald, but I like the idea of a captain, a vice captain. I don't like co-captains. Co-captain seems a little bit woke to me. I would far rather have someone. I know captains. I will play. Are you going to play the?
I'll get the.
Yes.
But for me, it's got you look to your captain to lead, and you look to your defensive captains to lead. You look to your eight, you look to your nine, you look to your ten to lead. And again, we'll go back to Purgos. Purgos, I'm sure with his knowledge, will be a great person to talk about game plan and execute Richard Cockerell's game plan. But thinking on his feet and moving people around and getting us across the game line, I don't think he's that person. So
I don't know. Yeah. He was very good at thinking on his feet, falling over, wasn't he?
Well, he does that a lot. He's a great actor. What a fantastic actor! I tell you that. Ollie Kevill's arm was so. Did you not see his? One of his arms is bigger than the other, and he hit him with that bigger arm. And that's what the problem was.
It was. How can his arm be bigger? I mean, size of those things anyway.
I'm still outraged on behalf of Ollie Kevill for what's happened there. But anyway,
everybody loves Ollie Kevill, really, don't they?
Say, if I had a scum half try to take a ball off me, I would be doing exactly that and worse, probably.
Exactly.
It's interesting, but we'll move on in a minute. But I think that the one thing from an Ember point of view is whether or not Richard Cockerell has moved on or is able to move on from his initial impression of the club and the players, which was they drove from one end of Murrayfield to the other in their cars, and they were lazy, and they were entitled, and they were only there to play to get their place on the Scotland, to play for Scotland. Whether or not he's been able to change his opinion of the players to a point where he feels he can trust them, and feels that they aren't there to do that anymore, and they are prepared to come along and commit, or whether he's got that entrenched view of them, I guess, Craig.
Yeah, that is a difficult one. I can imagine. How any of us, if we think about it, like how that looked, must have been horrendous. But then you look at people like Damien Hoyland, for example, who was part of that group. And he is turning, I've never ever questioned his commitment, but I've questioned his outlook on life, I guess, I suppose. But actually, if you see him, he's grafting every single time he wants the ball. He's trying to get at 15 is incredibly good defensively. Even at 14, he was doing a really good job on the weekend. When he got the ball, or he got to sniff the ball, but it's difficult. I think because Magnus Bradbury is one of those guys. He's the guy that got banned and was made captain, and he's going to be the clean sheet, and then he let him down. So I can imagine that Cockerell thinks, well, it's got to be my way because nobody else is going to do it, and that's the worrying point.
Yeah,
I often forget Magnus Bradbury's still only 25.
Oh yeah.
Well, it's like the anti George Horn. I forget that George Horn's 26. I sometimes think he's only 23.
Yeah, I mean he's 23. He's going on 12.
I think you were talking about it last week, John. About he's if he does go to another World Cup, that could be his last World Cup. And you're thinking, hang on a minute, he's only a bit.
He played against Russia in his first one. That's right. Like you've got another three World Cups if you play.
Absolutely,
against Russia.
Yeah.
But the it's like I suppose it's like Damien Hoyland, isn't it? I keep thinking, well, Damien Hoyland's the up and coming lad, isn't he? But he has been for about 10 years.
Yeah, very much so.
So, you know, and there's all these other players I think that, you know, we'll move on now because we've moaned about enough. Yeah. You know, you've got guys like Robin Nairn, you've got guys like Staff McDowell, and you just, you know, I would hope now that, you know, the younger players are going to be given a bit more of a chance, but whether or not that happens is a
To be fair to Stafford is very young still as well.
Oh, I know he's still quite young, but Robbie Nairn I thought was only in his early 20s, but he's a bit older now, I think, isn't he?
Yes, he's, and do you know, me and Ian have had rants about Robbie Nairn as well, where, like, he's one of these guys, we keep saying, give Robbie Nairn a chance, give Robbie Nairn a chance. See, if you give a player a chance and they make a total plat of it, then we can't give them a chance. It's professional sport. It's like, unfortunately, it's professional sport, and you don't get infinite retries.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to do a quick one of these.
Well, we're low tie and we're low close in dog and bop on in speedos, but I just want to know, did you see the legend that's Doogie Donnelly?
Referendum, who's a regular commenter on the blog, saw Gordon Rigg at the Adventure Ford at Culzean Country Park.
It's actually pronounced Colleen.
Is it?
Yes. It's a very nice country park down in Ayrshire.
Is that like the way that Gullen is called Gullain in Edinburgh?
Does it have a Z in it?
No. But we used to go and play golf. I used to go and play golf at the Muni at Gullen, but then I met somebody and we were talking about, when I was at uni in Newcastle, and there's this posh lad. And I was saying, oh, he said, I used to go and play, you know, I play golf up in, you know, in Edinburgh all the time with my, you know, with my dad and his friends. And I said, oh, my family are from up there. So we used to play Gullen all the time. I said, I don't know Gullen, but I used to go and play Gullain a lot. And then we worked out we were talking about the same place. He was on the posh course though. It's Hands in the Ruck time, which is our Any Other Business section of the podcast. If you're watching this live and you have a Hands in the Ruck, by all means, drop it into the comments. We've got a couple of comments I'm going to pick up on that we've had throughout the show during this point. Craig, you're the newbie. It's your debut. So can we have you give us your Hands in the Ruck first?
Hairstyles. I'm sorry. These guys are needing Doc Wan to come in and sort them out. This is ridiculous. Blair Kinghorn, what are you thinking?
Yes.
I didn't even recognise him.
Seriously, if I had a haircut like that, I'd be absolutely rattling down the hairdresser's door. Did he actually go and ask for that to happen? Or was it actually like one of his pals did it for him? It's ridiculous.
He looks like a guy who is underage and is trying to do something to make himself look like he can go and get served at the local office, didn't he?
With his fake moustache on and that. And just, it's like ridiculous. I love Blair Kinghorn, don't get me wrong, and I will stand up and say that guy is Edinburgh through and through, and celebrating being our youngest centurion is an absolutely fantastic achievement, and really absolutely congratulate him for that. But seriously, sort your lid out, mate. It's ridiculous.
You should have. I mean, you know, if you're going to a celebration of a formal event of your centenary, you need to at least dress up and look presentable for it.
Absolutely. Although I would say all he needs is one of those silvery, shiny suits, the really, really thin tie, and then he'd be straight into the 80s. He could start rolling his sleeves up. He'd be bang
on. Wee thin cigarette.
That's it.
Hanging off the lips.
Blair, is there something here? We need to think of 80s references to go along with the Kinghorn surname for the title for tonight's pod.
I'll try.
Well, what's his name? The Paul Calf.
He looks like Paul Calf.
There's an
obscure reference, Greg. You can come back. Obscure Steve Coogan characters from the 90s. That's what. That's right, in the wheelhouse of this podcast.
You do have current on your obscure, well, not even obscure characters, but your reference to a certain Mr. Price on Wikipedia Cam, don't you?
Oh yeah, well that was, yeah, I said that that was one of my crowning, if people who long-term listeners to this podcast will know that occasionally around team announcement time I will hop on to Wikipedia and edit Wikipedia entries, which is how Nick Haining became known as a ballet prodigy, with a with a sister who was a personal trainer to David Beckham, no less.
And Edinburgh, they're still claiming that it was his brother.
Still
or
claiming
cousin.
It was his mate in Perth, Australia, that did that rather than me, even though I've admitted it. So the one that got, there's a few littered around during the Lions. Unfortunately, my change of Chris Harris's that said he collected maps and travelled around European battlefields was taken off by an editor on Wikipedia. I was really hoping that'd stick.
That's a real shame. That should have stopped.
I know. Xander Ferguson. Now, this is true. Xander Ferguson, according to his alumni newsletter from the posh school he went to, he could do a really long slip and slide. Now, that was true, and I got the reference and I put it in, but they said it was irrelevant. I tried to put that in twice and they kept knocking it back. And I said, it's factually true that he was really good at the slip and slide, but they wouldn't let me do it.
Is that Xander Ferguson who cruelly made them, made Kyle, what's his name, the prop for Bristol, who didn't get in the Lions?
Kyle Sinclair.
Kyle Sinclair, cry. Made him cry. I know. That's ridiculous. That's Xander slander there for you.
I love the fact that Xander made Kyle cry. That I'm going to sleep better tonight knowing that.
Nobody's talked about porn. Xander
slander. That gets creepier every time I see it.
That's just freaking me out.
Right, so remember how I said I was going to sleep better?
So the one that caught on though in my Wikipedia entry was Ali Price, who is from King's Lynn in Norfolk. And so I said that Ali Price's nickname was A Harley Price because he's from Norfolk, like Alan Partridge. And I put a reference because we had once made reference to the fact that he's from Norfolk, and they used the citation as our podcast episode. Now, a popular clickbait rugby website then said that was his nickname. So I'm now able to put that on as a genuine citation. So now Ali Price is now, he can't change this because it's now referred to on a secondary source. He's known as R. Harley Price. So I'm really sorry.
Bravo.
Really sorry, Ali Price, that we did that to you. I managed to get Zandbags and Pinball to stick, though, but that's just factually true that's their nicknames.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I can't think. Somebody asked if I could edit Danny Kez to say that he did taxidermy. And I did it. And it stuck for about 24 hours before it got taken off. Mullets. I mean, I like Tom Gordon. I'm not going to. I can't agree completely because Tom Gordon's is magnificent. I think when you get to Mish and Tom Gordon levels of mulletry, then it's so ridiculous. It's actually
they've embraced it. They've embraced it, and is it
maybe the, what we call it, the Seven Amendment, where like if you play seven, you're allowed to have a spectacular mullet, but all else is banned.
Only fade, what we're saying, only fades in the blacks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, short back sides, absolutely. Well,
I'd see the point if Blair Kinghorn had actually turned around and gone, yes, look at me, I'm fabulous, but he looks like he's apologising for wearing it, so it's just,
it looks embarrassed.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked like he was apologising for his play, but now that you mention it, Craig, I think absolutely, no, I think he was apologising for his hair.
Seriously, if he ever got a red card, I would be getting his hair cut for going up to see the sanction board.
I remember I played.
Get your haircut, boy.
When I played for Berwick, we did really well. We had a really good Northumberland Cup run when I was playing in the youth section, and we were in the semi finals. And I remember before the game, most of the lads there had their head shaved, as was the fashion at the time, and then turning around to the rest of us that didn't have a head shaved and saying, "If we make the final, boys, everyone bicks their head." And I've never been so pleased to lose a rugby match in my life.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Okay, John, your hands in the ruck.
So it's a wee bit of an obscure one, actually. And, like, so it speaks to a lot of different things, but let's go for it. So Kyle Eastmond of English rugby fame, Slayer of Scotland a few times over the years, in various Calcutta Cup matches. He's been playing rugby league for a few years. He has retired. He has said a couple of games into the new season of rugby league, he has retired, saying that the passion is no longer there. There was a statement made about this. It was a thingy, what's his face, Kevin Sinfield, said that the fact he had a contract for this year and next, but decided to hang up his boots, speaks volumes about his integrity. And it actually got me thinking about, so the number of players who've come back from, like, were quite far from that original lockdown where all things stopped and we all sat in our houses and batted things for the NHS. Professional rugby players should be now at a point where they are fit and healthy to be playing rugby, right? Amateur games very different. We've not had any, you know, the roadmap is still pretty loose in terms of the amateur game, but professional rugby players should be fit. Now, if you've been watching any rugby, you will see players who are not fit to be playing professional rugby. And it is really surprising, and it kind of, you know, when you talk about rugby as a professional game and you look at it, you know, the comparison's always with football, and you look at the difference in conditioning. Football players have come back from lockdown and are faster, stronger, healthier, can jump higher, can hit things harder, whatever it is footballers do. Rugby's not really done that. And I think it's just a wee bit embarrassing, actually.
Yeah, it feels like a missed opportunity, doesn't it? That this, we've been talking about player welfare and managing game time and all of that. And here's been an opportunity as a sport for everyone just to take a break and have a long, prolonged period to kind of reset the attritional nature of the sport. And you can see the players that have embraced that and have, you know, have come out of lockdown absolutely, you know, in peak form, have benefited from the rest. And you can then see others who are very happy to keep playing rugby and, you know, but haven't necessarily embraced the opportunities to rest and reset themselves.
I think it just says a lot about you as a professional. And I think on such a public stage, like, we've all joked in the past, or, you know, Glasgow, I'm going to use the term that Glasgow used for it. This is not necessarily a term I would use for it, but Glasgow under Dave Rennie talked about Fat Camp, and Adam Ash and the various others on the Glasgow Warriors podcast talked about being in Fat Camp, which was where your fat level was slightly too high for what had been adjudged to be your peak fitness. So you basically had to do extra fitness. You were dietary monitored. There was so much work put on you. It seems very surprising that after a lockdown, after a period of absence, that we've got situations where there's guys who, like, to an unlearned observer, just watching on the television, you can see that people are struggling and you can see that people are not fit for playing this game. And it's just really surprising. I just can't get my head around it. Like, if that's your job, be fit.
Yeah, I suppose it's too that. I mean, the fitness thing's definitely one thing. I think the fat camp thing's a difficult one, because I remember, Craig, you might know, there was an Ember prop. It might have been Rory Sutherland. There was somebody that was talking about when they're at Ember, there was this constant need for them to thin down, and they just said they couldn't.
Jamie Batty.
That was a Jamie Batty.
Yeah.
I think was talking about it, saying that he was under constant pressure to thin down, to thin down, to thin down. And he just said it just wasn't his natural weight. It wasn't his natural playing weight. And he felt uncomfortable and he just couldn't shift the weight. And so I think there's Sam Laycock saying batty now, but yeah, I think there's a balance, isn't it, between, yeah, it's a science, isn't it, player conditioning. But there's a difference. What you're saying, John, is, you know, players clearly being out of puff. And yeah, not being able to play 80 minutes versus kind of the fat camp idea that everyone has to conform to some sort of ideal, which isn't necessarily true of all players, I guess.
But if you look at a guy like Jamie Batty, formerly of Edinburgh's Parish and, you know, coming back over to Glasgow, it's clear that strength and conditioning guys have obviously different approaches to how they see players being in shape, and that's fine. And as you say, that, you know, there's a science to that, and there's people who've spent their whole lives working out, you know, what weight a prop should be. But there's a big difference when you look at a player who is playing at centre and who looks like the, you know, the back end of a barn, and maybe shouldn't, you know, and is struggling to get their breath after 20 minutes. It's a very different thing.
Yeah.
I think you've got to be careful though, because I think the game has changed so much, and we're getting to that point now where I think we're pointing towards these the concussion problems that are coming up, that we've got these fit big guys that are now and fit big women who are hitting each other at such a pace nowadays, and they're conditioned to take that punishment, get back off the floor and move on. And something's got to give, and it's the moving part between your ears that's designed to be like a shock absorber, and that is taking it. And then you look at people like Sam Warburton, who in his prime had to say, enough's enough. You know, all of the shock absorber parts of my body, the knee cartilage, etc., is starting to hurt so much that I'm fed up of it. And so I think there's fitness, and let's be fit. But you know, there's WP Nell able to play 80 minutes, whether he liked it or not. He was playing 80 minutes for some reason. but you know, you've got these guys who will go out there and do that. Rugby's a game for everybody. And we have to ensure that, yes, they're professional, John. I totally understand it's their job. But we have to also be the role models, they have to be role models for everybody within rugby. And if we start seeing props that are half the size of what you would think of as a prop, then you're starting to put more and more pressure on being at local rugby clubs. These women and men have to be this size to do this job, and they have to be all the same size, and it becomes rugby league.
I was simply raising my eyebrow at the idea that rugby's for everyone, and I think that's a whole different conversation. I agree with you. I think we are starting to go away from that on a multitude of levels. But I love the fact WPNL played 80 minutes, and actually it looked fitter at age 35 playing prop than certain players did who are much younger and who should be in, you know, they're in the backs, so they should be fitter naturally.
It's interesting, isn't it? So this was nearly my heart is in the ruck last week if I'd been on, but you forget that this is a work environment, and like any work environment, you have good days and you have bad days. You have days when you're weeks where you're just not with it, you can't get your head in the game, you can't focus on your work. And you know, I think we forget sometimes that this is the same with rugby players, isn't it? Right, you know, they go in the train, and some days the head's just not going to be in the game. And flip that, and the thing that bothered me last week was the fight between Doohan and Fraser Brown, where they were going at each other. And I thought, do you know, there must be guys in the Scotland camp that just didn't like each other. Because yeah, there's people at my, you know, there's people in your office that you think, you know, I don't, you know, you just don't get on with them, and you cannot, you know, you have a professional relationship with them, but you absolutely wouldn't want to spend any time in the pub with them.
I think I was listening to Ryan Wilson on one of these being interviewed, and he was saying that he was talking about, they were asking about the, I think it was the it was, I think it was the Lions players or people from some of the Edinburgh players that he plays with. It was nice to be back in the Scotland squad because he got called back up again. And he's like, oh, I don't really know them.
Yeah.
And you think to yourself, in the romantic side of things, you think, oh, the Scotland players are all together and they all, they're living in each other's houses and going out for pints with each other. But actually, just as you say, they don't all know each other as well as that. And they also, just as you say, some of them might just when they get along.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's it. I think we expect that we kind of have this kind of rose-tinted view, don't we, of the squad all kind of happy and singing songs together. But that's so long as they all act professional around each other and get on, then that's all we can expect. And,
absolutely.
We've had on our regular, who I assume is a random American Twitch watcher, who says, who's the Michael Jordan of Scottish rugby?
Oh. I mean, so are we talking about hardest worker? Are we talking about pure talent? What is the Michael Jordan?
I think it has to be everything. I mean, Michael Jordan, you're talking about the GOAT plus the hardest worker plus that work ethos.
Finn Russell.
I think right now,
I'm not going to agree with that one.
I mean, it's the default answer.
Well, I think
he's done what in Scotland, though, Finn Russell. Aye.
Stuart Hogg would probably be the answer now.
He would be the Times answer.
The Daily Record answer is Finn Russell. The Times answer is Stuart Hogg. There's a great reference for our American viewers.
The Daily Record, when Finn Russell made his debut for Scotland, it was on the North American tour, and it was that game with the amazing American commentators. Oh. And the Daily Record streamed it live, and it was absolutely epic. Everyone
was glorious. I want those commentators back every game.
I would have to say, my comment would be Chris Patterson, because he was up there as a player, but he also drove standards at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, we've got Jordan Gusler, and this is why we had Laidlaw back in the day, and I would agree. I think Greg Laidlaw's in that Chris Patterson mould. And we talked about this on our Hardest Player podcast, although I'm not going to give anything away, John, because we'll do the finalists at the end, but we did talk about Greg Laidlaw in the 2010s and the fact that he single-handedly dragged Edinburgh and Scotland by the scruff of the neck.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Through some absolutely very difficult times. So for a little guy, you talk about hard players, you talk about guys that set standards. Greg Laidlaw's... I don't think Greg Laidlaw ever had a bad game. Teams around him had a bad game, but Greg Laidlaw never had a bad game.
The positions he played, it was like you could always give, like Greg done what he done very well, and he would always kick his goals. He would always, you know, you could argue his distribution wasn't necessarily technically proficient, but it done a job.
What did we say? What did we say on the? I think we said in the Patreon, we said there is a man that transcended his own skill set.
I think that's brutally accurate. Yes.
Yeah. You know, I mean that with the highest of praise. There's a man who pushed himself beyond his limits of what he was capable of, and did more.
And I think Jordan's actually just touched on that exact. That exact thing.
He loves a good night out of Finn.
He pushed himself beyond his limits of what he was capable of.
He certainly did, aye.
And to the hold of his buttons as well.
And there's a glorious note to end this podcast on. Thought of Greg Laidlaw shouting swear words, the sweary version of Flower of Scotland tearing his shirt open and
in the makeup.
And speaking of players that you wouldn't expect to get on, there's two, you know, right down on paper, two workmates who, you know, in the Scotland team who wouldn't get on, Finn Russell and Greg Laidlaw, best of mates.
Absolutely.
Thick as thieves. So, Craig, thank you very much for joining us. We'll get you back again.
Thanks, John.
Shortly, hopefully. John, lovely to see you again, as always.
I mean, I turn up at these things. I would turn up at the opening of an envelope, to be honest. But
we turn up, we hope to talk for an hour, and it's always an hour and a half.
That's it, mate. Yeah, at least it wasn't the me and Ian managed 2 hours recently. So
I know. Well, at least it wasn't that good. Okay. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We hope you've enjoyed it. We'll be back next. Well, actually, I need to talk to John because I'm on holiday next week. But we may be back in some form next week.
Oh dear. Are the cats loose?
And then
Jake,
we've got
you,
some...
Jake, do you want to come on with me and Ian next week, eh?
I'll be the prop in the corner drinking.
There we go. So we're all sorted for next week anyway. But for the moment, it's goodbye from me and goodbye from Craig and John.
Good night, folks.